The next day, 5 more puppies were brought down to Perdita, and she fed them splendidly. So Mr. Dearley went to his business. He hurried back early to do some pup feeding, and found that Mrs. Dearley was feeding the upstairs puppies, and the nannies were taking it in turns to feed the kitchen puppies. He was a little jealous, but soon got over it, for he knew that what really mattered was that pups should get plenty of milk without exhausting Mrs. and poor thin Perdita too much. Perdita now had her bed in the dresser cupboard, where there would not be too much light for the puppies' eyes. These began to open in 8 days, and a week after that, the puppies' spots began to show. What a day it was when Mr. Dearley sighted the first spot! After that, spots came thick and fast, though they would not all be through for some months. In a very few days, it was possible to recognize every pup by its spots. There were 7 girls and 8 boys. The prettiest of all the girls was the tiny pup whose life Mr. Dearley had saved at birth, but she was very small and delicate. When pigs have families, the smallest, weakest piglet is often called the cad pig. Mr. Dearley always called the tiny puppy Cad Pig, which can be a nice little name when spoken with love. Patch, the pup born with a black ear, was still the biggest and strongest puppy. He always seemed to be next to the Cad Pig, as if these two already knew they were going to be special friends. There was a fat, funny boy puppy called Roly-Poly, who was always getting into mischief. And the most striking pup of all was one who had a perfect horseshoe of spots on his back, and had therefore been named Lucky. He was terrifically energetic, and showed from the beginning that he was going to be the ringleader of all his brothers and sisters. A few days after the first spots came through, something very upsetting happened. Perdita's milk supply failed. She was miserable about it because she loved the 7 pups she'd been feeding as much as if they were her own, and she was very, very frightened. Now that she was no longer useful, why should the Dearleys keep her in this warm, comfortable house, where, for the first time in her life, she had been given enough to eat? But it was not the food and warmth that mattered most to her. It was the love. She had been treated as one of the family. The thought of leaving it all was more than she could bear. And what happened to dogs nobody wanted? All sorts of fears awoke in her heart. The morning she found she had no milk to offer at all, she crept unhappily out of the dresser cupboard and saw Mrs. Dearley having a mid-morning cup of tea with the nannies. Mrs. Dearley held out a biscuit. Perdita did not take it. She just laid her head against Mrs. Dearley's knee and gave a little moan. Mrs. Dearley stroked her and said, "Poor Perdita. I wish we could explain to her that we are helping to feed her 7 puppies, so she doesn't need to worry. Darling Perdita, you are washing them beautifully and keeping them warm at night. We couldn't possibly do without you." She had no hope of being understood. She just thought her soothing tone would be comforting. But Perdita was picking up more and more human words every day and understood perfectly. She was wild with relief. For the first time, she showed really high spirits, jumping up and kissing Mrs. Dearley, then dashing back to wash the puppies all over again. Not many days after this, all pups began learning to lap milk for themselves, and could soon eat milk puddings and bread soaked in gravy. They were now much too big to go on living in cupboards. Mrs. and her 8 were moved down to the laundry, while Perdita's 7 had the run of the kitchen, where they got terribly under the nanny's feet. "What a pity they can't be in the laundry with their brothers and sisters," said Nanny Cook one morning. "Missus might hurt them. She wouldn't know them for her own now," said Nanny Butler. "And she and Perdita would fight." Pongo heard this and decided something must be done, for he knew that whatever usual dogs would do, Missus would know her own puppies, and she and Perdita would not fight. So he had a word with Missus under the laundry door. And that afternoon, when the nannies were upstairs, he took a flying leap at the door and managed to burst it open. Out hurtled Mrs. and 8 puppies, and when the nannies came downstairs, they found Pongo, Mrs. and Perdita all playing happily with 15 puppies, who were now so mixed up that it took the nannies all their time to decide which pups had been brought up by which mother. After that, all pups lived in the laundry. The door was kept open, and a piece of wood was put across it, high enough to keep all puppies in, but low enough to be jumped by Mrs. and Perdita when they wanted to come into the kitchen. By now it was December, but the days were fine and surprisingly warm, so the puppies were able to play in the area several times a day. They were quite safe there, for the gate at the top of the steps which led to the street now had a strong spring to keep it closed. One morning, when the three dogs and 15 puppies were taking the air, Pongo saw a tall woman looking down over the area railings. He recognized her at once. It was Cruella de Vil. As usual, she was wearing her absolutely simple white mink cloak, but she now had a brown mink coat under it. Her hat was made of fur, her boots were lined with fur, and she wore big fur gloves. "What will she wear when it's really cold?" thought Nanny Butler, coming out into the area. Cruella opened the gate and walked down the steps, saying how pretty the puppies were. Lucky, always the ringleader, came running towards her and nibbled at the fur round the tops of her boots. She picked him up and placed him against her cloak, as if he was something to be worn. "Such a pretty horseshoe," she said, looking at the spots on his back. "But they all have pretty markings. Are they old enough to leave their mother yet?" "Very nearly," said Nanny Butler, "but they won't have to. Mr. and Mrs. Dearley are going to keep them all." Sometimes the nannies wondered just how this was going to be managed. "How nice," said Cruella, and began going up the steps, still holding Lucky against her cloak. Pongo, Mrs. and Perdita all barked sharply, and Lucky reached up and nipped Cruella's ear. She gave a scream and dropped him. Nanny Butler was quick enough to catch him in her apron. "That woman," said Nanny Cook, who had just come out into the area, "she's enough to frighten the spots off a pup. What's the matter, Lucky?" For Lucky had dashed into the laundry and was gulping down water. Cruella's ear had tasted of pepper. Every day now, the puppies grew stronger and more independent. They now fed themselves entirely, eating shredded meat as well as soaked bread and milk puddings. Mrs. and Perdita were quite happy to leave them now for an hour or more at a time. So the three grown-up dogs took Mrs. Dearley and Nanny Butler for a good walk in the park every morning, while Nanny Cook got the lunch and kept an eye on the puppies. One morning, when she had just let them out into the area, the front doorbell rang. It was Cruella de Vil, and when she heard Mrs. Dearley was out, she said she would come in and wait. She asked many questions about the Dearleys and the puppies, and went on talking so long that at last Nanny Cook said she really must go down and let the puppies in, as a cold wind was blowing. Cruella then said she would walk in the park and hope to meet Mrs. Dearley. "Perhaps I can see her from here," she said, strolling to the window. Nanny Cook also went to the window, intending to point out the nearest way into the park. As she did so, she noticed a small black van standing in front of the house. At that very moment, it drove off at a great pace. Cruella suddenly seemed in a hurry. She almost ran out of the house and down the front door steps. "Can't think how she can move so fast, huddled in all those furs," thought Nanny Cook, closing the front door. "And those poor pups, in only their own thin little skins, catching their death of cold." She hurried down to the kitchen and opened the door to the area. Not a pup was in sight. "They're playing me a trick. They're hiding," Nanny Cook told herself. But she knew there was nowhere for 15 puppies to hide. All the same, she looked behind every tub of shrubs, where not even a mouse could have hidden. The gate at the top of the steps was firmly closed, and no pup could possibly have opened it. Still, she ran up to the street and searched wildly. "They've been stolen! I know they have," she moaned, bursting into tears. "They must have been in that black van I saw driving away." Cruella de Vil seemed to have changed her mind about going into the park. She was already halfway back to her own house, walking very fast indeed. Through her tears, Nanny Cook stared towards the park. She could now see Mrs. Dearley, Nanny Butler, and the three dogs who had just turned for home. It seemed a strange and terrible thing that they could be strolling along so happily when every step brought them nearer to such dreadful news. As they came across the outer circle, Nanny Cook ran to meet them, crying so much that Mrs. Dearley found it hard to understand what had happened. The dogs heard the word puppies, saw Nanny Cook's tears, and rushed down to the area. Then they went dashing over the whole house, searching, searching. Every few minutes, Mrs. and Perdita howled, and Pongo barked furiously. While the dogs searched, and the nannies cried on each other's shoulder, Mrs. Dearley telephoned Mr. Dearley. He came home at once, bringing with him one of the top men from Scotland Yard. The top man found a bit of sacking on the area railings, and said the puppies must have been dropped into sacks and driven away in the black van. He promised to comb the underworld, but warned the Dearleys that stolen dogs were seldom recovered unless a reward was offered. A reward seemed an unreasonable thing to offer a thief, but Mr. Dearley was willing to offer it. He rushed to Fleet Street and had large advertisements put on the front pages of the evening papers. This was rather expensive, and arranged for even larger advertisements to be put on the front pages of the next day's morning papers. This was even more expensive. Beyond this, there seemed nothing he or Mrs. Dearley could do, except try to comfort each other, and comfort the nannies and the dogs. Soon the nannies stopped crying and joined in the comforting, and prepared beautiful meals which nobody felt like eating. And at last, night fell on the stricken household. Worn out, the three dogs lay in their baskets in front of the kitchen fire.
"Think of my baby Cadpig in a sack," said Mrs. with a sob.
"Her big brother Patch will take care of her," said Pongo soothingly, though he felt most unsoothed himself.
"Lucky is so brave he will bite the thieves," wailed Perdita, "and then they will kill him."
"No, they won't," said Pongo. "The pups were stolen because they are valuable. No one will kill them. They are only valuable while they're alive."
But even as he said this, a terrible suspicion was forming in his mind, and it grew and grew as the night wore on. Long after Mrs. and Perdita, utterly exhausted, had fallen asleep, he lay awake staring at the fire, chewing the wicker of his basket, as a man might have smoked a pipe. Anyone who did not know Pongo well would have thought him handsome, amusing, and charming, but not particularly clever. Even the Dearleys did not quite realize the depths of his mind. He was often still so puppyish. He would run after balls and sticks, climb into laps far too small to hold him, roll over on his back to have his stomach scratched. How was anyone to guess that this playful creature owned one of the keenest brains in dogdom? It was at work now. All through the long December night, he put two and two together and made four. Once or twice, he almost made five. He had no intention of alarming Mrs. and Perdita with his suspicions. Poor Pongo. He not only suffered on his own account as a father, he also suffered on the account of two mothers. For he had come to feel the puppies had two mothers, though he never felt he had two wives. He looked on Perdita as a much-loved young sister. He would say nothing about his worst fears until he was quite sure. Meanwhile, there was an important task ahead of him. He was still planning it when the nannies came down to start another day. As a rule, this was a splendid time, with the fire freshly made, plenty of food around, and the puppies at their most playful. This morning, well, as Nanny Butler said, it just didn't bear thinking about. But she thought about it, and so did everybody else in that pupless house. No good news came during the day. But the Dearleys were surprised and relieved to find that the dogs ate well. Pongo had been firm. "You girls have got to keep your strength up." And there was an even greater surprise in the afternoon. Pongo and Mrs. showed very plainly that they wanted to take the Dearleys for a walk. Perdita did not. She was determined to stay at home in case any pup returned and was in need of a wash. Cold weather had come at last. Christmas was only a week away. "Mrs. must wear her coat," said Mrs. Dearley. It was a beautiful blue coat with a white binding. Mrs. was very proud of it. Coats had been bought for Pongo and Perdita, too, but Pongo had made it clear he disliked wearing his. So the coat was put on, Missus, and both dogs were dressed in their handsome chain collars. And then they put the dearlies on their leashes and led them into the park. From the first, it was quite clear the dogs knew just where they wanted to go. Very firmly, they led the way right across the park, across the road, and to the open space which is called Primrose Hill. This did not surprise the dearlies, as it had always been a favourite walk. What did surprise them was the way Pongo and Missus behaved when they got to the top of the hill. They stood side by side, and they barked. They barked to the north, they barked to the south, they barked to the east and west. And each time they changed their positions, they began the barking with three very strange, short, sharp barks. "Anyone would think they were signalling," said Mr. Dearley. But he did not really mean it. And they were signalling. Many people must have noticed how dogs like to bark in the early evening. Indeed, twilight has sometimes been called dog's barking time. Busy town dogs bark less than country dogs. But all dogs know all about the twilight barking. It is their way of keeping in touch with distant friends, passing on important news, enjoying a good gossip. But none of the dogs who answered Pongo and Missus expected to enjoy a gossip, for the three short, sharp barks meant, "Help! Help! Help!" No dog sends that signal unless the need is desperate, and no dog who hears it ever fails to respond. Within a few minutes, the news of the stolen puppies was travelling across England, and every dog who heard at once turned detective. Dogs living in London's underworld, hard-bitten characters, also hard-biting, set out to explore sinister alleys where dog thieves lurk. Dogs in pet shops hastened to make quite sure all puppies offered for sale were not Dalmatians in disguise. And dogs who could do nothing else swiftly handed on the news, spreading it through London and on through the suburbs, and on to the open country. "Help! Help! Help! 15 Dalmatian puppies stolen! Send news to Pongo and Mrs. Pongo of Regent's Park, London. End of message." Pongo and Missus hoped all this would be happening, but all they really knew was that they had made contact with the dogs near enough to answer them, and that those dogs would be standing by at twilight the next evening to relay any news that had come along. One Great Dane, over towards Hampstead, was particularly encouraging. "I have a chain of friends all over England," he said in his great booming bark, "and I will be on duty day and night. Courage, courage, O dogs of Regent's Park!" It was almost dark now, and the dearlies were suggesting, very gently, that they should be taken home. So, after a few last words with the Great Dane, Pongo and Missus led the way down Primrose Hill. The dogs who had answered them were silent now, but the twilight barking was spreading in an ever-widening circle. And tonight it would not end with twilight. It would go on and on as the moon rose high over England. The next day, a great many people who had read Mr. Dearley's advertisements rang up to sympathise. Cruella de Vil did, and seemed most upset when she was told the puppies had been stolen while she was talking to Nanny Cook. But no one had anything helpful to say, and Scotland Yard was frankly baffled. So it was another sad, sad day for the dearlies, the nannies, and the dogs. Just before dusk, Pongo and Missus again showed that they wished to take the dearlies for a walk. So off they started, and again the dogs led the way to the top of Primrose Hill. And again they stood side by side and gave three sharp barks. But this time, though no human ear could have detected it, they were slightly different barks. And they meant not "Help, help, help," but "Ready, ready, ready." The dogs who had collected news from all over London replied first. Reports had come in from the West End and the East End and south of the Thames, and all these reports were the same. "Calling Pongo and Mrs. Pongo of Regent's Park. No news of your puppies. Deepest regrets. End of message." Poor Missus. She had hoped so much that her pups were still in London. Pongo's secret suspicion had led him to pin his hopes to news from the country,
and soon it was pouring in, some of it relayed across London. But it was always the same. "Calling Pongo and Mrs. Pongo of Regent's Park. No news of your puppies. Deepest regrets. End of message." Again and again, Pongo and Mrs. barked the ready signal, each time with fresh hope. Again and again came bitter disappointment. At last, only the Great Dane over towards Hampstead remained to be heard from. They signalled to him, their last hope. Back came his booming bark. "Calling Pongo and Mrs. Pongo of Regent's Park. No news of your puppies. Deepest regrets. End of..." The Great Dane stopped in mid-bark. A second later he barked again. "Wait! Wait! Wait!" Dead still, their hearts thumping, Pongo and Mrs. waited. They waited so long that Mr. Dearley put his hand on Pongo's head and said, "What about coming home, boy?" For the first time in his life, Pongo jerked his head from Mr. Dearley's hand, then went on standing stock still. And at last the Great Dane spoke again, booming triumphantly through the gathering dusk. "Calling Pongo and Mrs. Pongo! News! News at last! Stand by to receive details!" A most wonderful thing had happened. Just as the Great Dane had been about to sign off, a Pomeranian with a piercing yap had got a message through to him. She had heard it from a poodle, who had heard it from a boxer, who had heard it from a Pekingese. Dogs of almost every known breed had helped to carry the news, and a great many dogs of unknown breed, none the worse for that, and all of them bright as buttons. In all, 480 dogs had relayed the message, which had travelled over 60 miles as the dog barks. Each dog had given the urgent signal, which had silenced all gossiping dogs. Not that many dogs were merely gossiping that night. Almost all the twilight barking had been about the missing puppies. This was the strange story that now came through to Pongo and Mrs. Some hours earlier, an elderly English sheepdog, living on a farm in a remote Suffolk village, had gone for an afternoon amble. He knew all about the missing puppies, and had just been discussing them with the tabby cat at the farm. She was a great friend of his. Some little way from the village, on a lonely heath, was an old house completely surrounded by an unusually high wall. Two brothers, named Saul and Jasper Badden, lived there, but were merely caretakers for the real owner. The place had an evil reputation. No local dog would have dreamed of putting its nose inside the tall iron gates. In any case, these gates were always kept locked. It so happened that the sheepdog's walk took him past this house. He quickened his pace, having no wish to meet either of the Baddens. And at that moment, something came sailing out over the high wall. It was a bone, the sheepdog saw with pleasure. But not a bone with meat on it, he noted with disgust. It was an old dry bone, and on it were some peculiar scratches. The scratches formed letters, and the letters were S.O.S. Someone was asking for help. Someone behind the tall wall and the high chained gates. The sheepdog barked a low, cautious bark. He was answered by a high, shrill bark. Then he heard a yelp, as if some dog had been cuffed. The sheepdog barked again, saying, "I'll do all I can." Then he picked up the bone in his teeth and raced back to the farm. Once home, he showed the bone to the tabby cat and asked her help. Then together they hurried to the lonely house. At the back, they found a tree whose branches reached over the wall. The cat climbed the tree, went along its branches, and then leapt to a tree the other side of the wall. "Take care of yourself," barked the sheepdog. "Remember, those Badden brothers are villains." The cat clawed her way down, backwards to the ground, then hurried through the overgrown shrubbery. Soon she came to an old brick wall which enclosed a stable yard. From behind the wall came whimperings and snufflings. She leapt to the top of the wall and looked down. The next second, one of the Badden brothers saw her and threw a stone at her. She dodged it, jumped from the wall, and ran for her life. In 2 minutes, she was safely back with the sheepdog. "They're there," she said triumphantly. "The place is seething with Dalmatian puppies." The sheepdog was a formidable twilight barker.
Tonight, with the most important news in dogdom to send out, he surpassed himself. And so the message travelled by way of farm dogs and house dogs, great dogs and small dogs. Sometimes a bark would carry half a mile or more. Sometimes it would only need to carry a few yards. One sharp-eared cairn saved the chain from breaking by picking up a bark from nearly a mile away, and then almost bursting herself, getting it on to the dog next door. Across miles and miles of country, across miles and miles of suburbs, across a network of London streets, the chain held firm, from the depths of Suffolk to the top of Primrose Hill, where Pongo and Mrs., still as statues, stood listening. Listening. Puppies found in lonely house. SOS on old bone. Mrs. could not take it all in, but Pongo missed nothing. There were instructions for reaching the village, suggestions for the journey, offers of hospitality on the way. And the dog chain was standing by to take a message back to the pups. The sheepdog would bark it over the wall in the dead of night. At first, Mrs. was too excited to think of anything to say. But Pongo barked clearly, "Tell them we're coming. Tell them we start tonight. Tell them to be brave." Then Mrs. found her voice. "Give them all our love. Tell Patch to take care of the cad pig. Tell Lucky not to be too daring. Tell Roly-Poly to keep out of mischief." She would have sent a message to every one of the 15 pups if Pongo had not whispered, "That's enough, dear. We mustn't make it too complicated. Let the Great Danes start work now." So they signed off, and there was a sudden silence. And then, though not quite so loudly, they heard the Great Dane again. But this time he was not barking towards them. What they heard was their message starting on its way to Suffolk. As they walked the Dearleys home, Pongo said to Mrs., "Did you hear who owns the house where the puppies are imprisoned?" Mrs. said, "No, Pongo, I'm afraid I missed many things," the Great Dane barked. "I will tell you everything later," said Pongo. He was faced with a problem. He now knew that his terrible suspicions were justified, and it was time Mrs. learned the truth. But if he told her before dinner, she might lose her appetite, and if he told her afterwards, she might lose her dinner. So still he said nothing, and he made her eat every crumb of dinner, and then join him in asking for more, which the nannies gave with delight. "It may be a long time before we get another meal," he explained. While the nannies fed the Dearleys, the dogs made their plans. Perdita at once offered to come to Suffolk with them. "But you were still much too delicate for the journey, dear Perdita," said Mrs. "Besides, what could you do?" "I could wash the puppies," said Perdita. Both Pongo and Mrs. then said they knew Perdita was a beautiful puppy washer, but her job must be to comfort the Dearleys. And she felt that herself. "If only we could make them understand why we are leaving them," said Mrs. sadly. "If we could do that, we shouldn't have to leave them," said Pongo. "They would drive us to Suffolk in the car and send the police."
"Oh, let us have one more try to speak their language," said Mrs.
The Dearleys were sitting by the fire in the big white drawing-room. They welcomed the two dogs and offered them the sofa. But Pongo and Mrs. had no wish for a comfortable nap. They stood together, looking imploringly at the Dearleys. Then Pongo barked gently,
"Woof, woof, woofuck."
Mr. Dearley patted him, but understood nothing.
Then Mrs. tried, "Woof, woof, woofuck."
"Are you telling us the puppies are in Suffolk?" said Mrs. Dearley.
The dogs wagged their tails wildly, but Mrs. Dearley was only joking. It was hopeless, and the dogs knew it always would be. Dogs can never speak the language of humans, and humans can never speak the language of dogs. But many dogs can understand almost every word humans say, while humans seldom learn to recognize more than half a dozen barks, if that. And barks are only a small part of the dog language. A wagging tail can mean so many things. Humans know that it means a dog is pleased, but not what a dog is saying about his pleasedness. Really, it is very clever of humans to understand a wagging tail at all, as they have no tails of their own. Then there are the snufflings and sniffings, the pricking of ears, all meaning different things. and many, many words are expressed by a dog's eyes. It was with their eyes that Pongo and Mrs. spoke most that evening, for they knew the Dearlys could at least understand one eye word. That word was love, and the dogs said it again and again, leaning their heads against the Dearlys' knees. And the Dearlys said, "Dear Pongo, dear Mrs.," again and again. "They're asking us to find their puppies, I know they are," said Mrs. Dearly, never guessing that, as well as declaring their love, the dogs were saying, "We are going to find the puppies. Please forgive us for leaving you. Please have faith in our safe return." At 11 o'clock, the dogs gave Mrs. Dearly's hand one last kiss and took Mr. Dearly out for his last run. Perdita joined them for this. She had spent the evening with the nannies, feeling that Pongo and Mrs. might wish to be alone with their pets. Then all three dogs went to their baskets in the warm kitchen, and the house settled for the night. But it did not settle for long. Shortly before midnight, Pongo and Mrs. got up, ate some biscuits they had hidden, and took long drinks of water. Then they said a loving goodbye to Perdita, who was in tears, nosed open a window at the back of the house, and got out into the mews. They knew they could not open the gate at the top of the area steps. Carefully, they nosed the window shut so that Perdita would not get a chill, and then went round to the area railings to give her one last smile. Dogs smile in various ways. Pongo and Mrs. smiled by wrinkling their noses. She was there at the kitchen window, bravely trying to wag her tail. Beyond Perdita, Mrs. could see the three cushioned baskets in the rosy glow from the fire. She thought of the many peaceful nights she had spent in hers, in the happy days when a dog could fall asleep looking forward to breakfast. Poor Mrs. Of course she loved Pongo, the puppies, the Dearlys, and the nannies, and dear kind Perdita, best of everything in the world. But she also loved her creature comforts. Never had her home seemed so dear to her as now, when she was leaving it for a dangerous, unknown world. And it was such a cold world. The night was fine, the stars were brilliant, but the wind was keen. If only she could have brought her beautiful blue coat, now hanging on a peg in the warm kitchen. Pongo saw her shiver. It is a hard thing for a loving husband to see his wife shiver. "Are you cold, Mrs.?" he asked anxiously. "No, Pongo," said Mrs., still shivering. "I am," said Pongo, untruthfully, "but I shall soon warm up." He tail-wagged goodbye to Perdita, then started off briskly along the outer circle, looking very spirited. Mrs. kept pace with him, but after its last wag to Perdita, her tail went down. After a few minutes, Pongo said, "Are you warmer now, Mrs.?" "Yes, Pongo," said Mrs., still shivering. And still her tail was down. Pongo knew that if he could not cheer her up, she would never be able to face the hardships that lay ahead. And he thought he could do with some cheering up himself. So he began a little speech, intended to give them both courage. "I sometimes think," he said, "that you and I have become a bit pampered. Well, pampering does good dogs no harm, provided they don't come to depend on it. If they do, they become old before their time. We should never lose our liking for adventure. Never forget our wild ancestry." They were then passing the zoo. "Oh, I know we are worried about the puppies, but the more we worry, the less we shall be able to help them. We must be brave. We must even be gay. We must know we cannot fail. Are you warmer now, Mrs.?" "Yes, Pongo," said Mrs. But still she shivered, and still her tail drooped. They were now nearly at the bridge which leads from the outer circle towards Camden Town. "Stop for a moment," said Pongo. And he turned and looked back along the curve of the circle. No car was in sight. No light was in any window. The lampposts were like sentinels guarding the sleeping park. "Think of the day when we come back with 15 puppies running behind us," said Pongo.
"Oh, Pongo, are you sure?" "Absolutely sure," said Pongo. "Are you a little warmer now, dear Mrs.?" Yes, Pongo,
said Mrs. And this time it was true.
Then onwards to Suffolk, said Pongo.
And as they ran towards the bridge, Mrs. carried her tail as high as his.
Not too high, Mrs. dear, said Pongo. Let our hearts be gay, but not our tails.
For when a Dalmatian's tail is curled high over the back, it is called a gay tail, and is a bad fault. Mrs. was still laughing at this little joke, when her heart gave a wild flutter. Coming towards them was a policeman. Instantly, Pongo led the way into a back street, and they were soon safely out of the policeman's sight. But seeing him had reminded Mrs. of something.
Oh, Pongo, she wailed, we are illegal. We are out without our collars.
And a good thing, too, said Pongo, for a dog can be grabbed by the collar. But I do wish we could have brought your coat. He had noticed that she was shivering again, though this time it was because she had been scared by the policeman.
I don't, said Mrs. bravely, for if I wore a coat, how should I know how cold the puppies were? They have no coats. Oh, Pongo, how can they make the journey from Suffolk in such wintry weather? Suppose it snows. They may not have to make the journey yet, said Pongo.
Mrs. stared in astonishment.
But we must get them back quickly, or the dog thieves will sell them. Nothing will happen to them yet, said Pongo.
And now he knew it was time to tell his wife the truth.
Let's rest a moment, he said,
and led Mrs. into the shelter of a doorway. Then he went on, gently,
Dear Mrs., our puppies were not stolen by ordinary dog thieves. Try not to be too frightened. Remember, we are going to rescue them. Our puppies were stolen by Cruella de Vil's orders, so that she can have their skins made into a fur coat. Oh, Mrs., be brave.
Mrs. had collapsed. She lay on the doorstep, panting, her eyes full of horror.
But it will be all right, dear Mrs. They will be safe for months yet. They're much too small to be used for a fur coat yet.
Mrs. shuddered. Then she struggled to her feet.
I will go back, she cried. I will go back and tear Cruella de Vil to pieces.
That would do no good at all, said Pongo firmly. We must rescue the puppies first, and think of our revenge later.
On to Suffolk.
On to Suffolk, then, said Mrs., staggering along on shaky legs.
But we shall come back, Cruella de Vil.
Soon Mrs. began to feel better, for Pongo made her see that puppies whose skins were wanted for a fur coat would be well fed and well taken care of and kept together. Ordinary dog thieves might have sold them already and to different people. She asked many questions, and he told of his early suspicions, how he had suddenly recalled the evening they'd first seen Cruella and sat under the piano in the red drawing room. She said we would make enchanting fur coats, Mrs.
For spring wear, over a black suit, said Mrs., remembering. And she did take a lot of interest in the puppies.
And she kept Nanny Cook talking while they were stolen, said Pongo.
But I wasn't quite sure until this evening at the twilight barking. You didn't hear as much as I did, Mrs. Our puppies are at Hell Hall, the ancestral home of the De Vils.
And he knew, though he kept this from Mrs., that the S.O.S., on the old bone, meant save our skins. Pongo had no difficulty in taking the right road out of London, for he and Mr. Dearly had done much motoring in their bachelor days and often driven to Suffolk. Mile after mile, the two dogs ran through the deserted streets as the December night grew colder. At last, London was left behind, and just before dawn, they reached a village in Epping Forest, where they hoped to spend the day. They had decided they must always travel by night and rest during daylight, for they felt sure Mr. Dearly would advertise their loss and the police would be on the lookout for them. There was far less chance of their being seen and caught by night. They had barely entered the sleeping village when they heard a quiet bark. The next moment, a burly golden retriever was greeting them.
Pongo and Mrs. Pongo, I presume. All arrangements were made for you by late twilight barking. Please follow me.
He led them to an old gabled inn and then under an archway to a cobbled yard.
Please drink here at my own bowl, he said. Food awaits you in your sleeping quarters, but water could not be arranged.
For no dog can carry a full water bowl. Pongo and Mrs. had had only one drink since they left home, at an old drinking trough for horses, which had a lower trough for dogs. They now gulped thirstily and gratefully.
"My pride as an innkeeper tempts me to offer you one of our best bedrooms," said the golden retriever. "They combine old-world charm with all modern conveniences, and no charge for breakfast in bed. But it wouldn't be wise."
"No, indeed," said Pongo. "We might be discovered."
"Exactly. We are putting you in the safest place any of us could think of. Naturally, every dog in the village came to the meeting after the late barking, when we heard this village was to have the honour of receiving you. Step this way."
At the far end of the yard were some old stables, and in the last stable of all was a broken-down stagecoach. "Just the right place for Dalmatians," said Pongo, smiling, "for our ancestors were trained to run behind coaches and carriages. Some people still call us coach dogs or carriage dogs."
"And your run from London has shown you are worthy of your ancestors," said the golden retriever. "When I was a pup, we sometimes took this old coach out for the school picnic, but no one's bothered with it for years now. You should be quite safe, and some dogs will always be on guard. In case of sudden alarm, you can go out by the back door of the stable and escape across the fields."
There was a deep bed of straw on the floor of the coach, and neatly laid out on the seat were two magnificent chops, half a dozen iced cakes, and a box of peppermint creams.
"From the butcher's dog, the baker's dog, and the dog at the sweet shop," said the retriever. "I shall arrange your dinner. Will steak be satisfactory?"
Pongo and Mrs. said it would indeed, and tried to thank him for everything, but he waved their thanks away, saying,
"It's a very great honour. We are planning a small plaque, to be concealed from human eyes, of course, saying, 'Pongo and Mrs. slept here.'"
Then he took them to the cobwebbed window and pointed out a smaller edition of himself, who was patrolling the inn courtyard.
"My youngest lad, already on guard. He's hoping to see you for a moment when you're rested, and ask for your paw marks to start his collection. A small guard of honour will see you out of the village, but I shan't let them waste too much of your time. Good night, though it's really good morning. Pleasant dreams."
As soon as he'd gone, Pongo and Mrs. ate ravenously. "Though perhaps we should not eat too heavily before sleeping," said Pongo. So they left a couple of peppermint creams. Mrs. later ate them in her sleep. Then they settled down in the straw, close together, and got warmer and warmer. Mrs. said, "Do you feel sure our puppies will be well fed and well taken care of?"
"Quite sure. And they will be safe for a long time, because their spots are nowhere near big enough for a striking fur coat yet.
Oh, Mrs., how pleasant it is to be on our own like this." Mrs. thumped her tail with joy and with relief, for there had been moments when she'd felt, not jealous exactly, but just a bit wistful about Pongo's affection for Perdita. She loved Perdita, was grateful to her, and sorry for her. Still, well, it was nice to have her own husband to herself, thought Mrs. But she made herself say, "Poor Perdita. No husband, no puppies. We must never let her feel we want to be on our own."
"I do hope she can comfort the dearlies," said Pongo.
"She will wash them," said Mrs. And fell asleep. How gloriously they slept. It was their first really deep sleep since the loss of the puppies. Even the twilight barking did not disturb them. It brought good news, which the retriever told them when he woke them as soon as it was dark. All was well with the pups, and Lucky sent a message that they were getting more food than they could eat. This gave Pongo and Mrs. a wonderful appetite for the steaks that were waiting for them. While they ate, they chatted to the retriever and his wife and their family, who lived at various houses in the village. And the retriever told Pongo how to reach the village where the next day was to be spent. This had been arranged by the twilight barking. The steaks were finished, and a nice piece of cheese was going down well, when the corgi from the post office arrived with the evening paper in her mouth. Mr. Dearly had put in his largest advertisement yet, with a photograph of Pongo and Mrs. taken during the joint honeymoon. Pongo's heart sank, for he felt the route planned for them was no longer safe. It led through many villages, where even by night they might be noticed, unless they waited till all humans had gone to bed, which would waste too much time. He said, "We must travel across country."
"But you'll get lost," said the retriever's wife.
"Pongo never loses his way," said Mrs. proudly.
"And the moon will be nearly full," said the retriever. "You should manage, but it will be hard to pick up food. I had arranged for it to await you in several villages."
Pongo said they had eaten so much that they could do without food until the morning, but he hated to think dogs might be waiting up for them during the night.
"I will cancel it by the 9 o'clock barking," said the retriever.
There was a snuffling at the back door of the stable. All the dogs of the village had arrived to see Pongo and Mrs. off.
"We should start at once," said Pongo. "Where's our young friend who wants paw marks?"
The retriever's youngest lad stepped forward shyly, carrying an old menu. Pongo and Mrs. put their portographs on the back of it for him, then thanked the retriever and his family for all they had done. Outside, two rows of dogs were waiting to cheer. But no human ear could have heard the cheers, for every dog had now seen the photograph in the evening paper and knew an escape must be made in absolute silence. Pongo and Mrs. bowed right and left, gratefully sniffing their thanks to all. Then, after a last goodbye to the retriever, they were off across the moonlit fields.
"On to Suffolk," said Pongo.